You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, November 9th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Joe Biden assumes the mantle of president-elect. Kamala Harris becomes the first woman and woman of color to become vice president-elect. Meanwhile, coronavirus nears escape velocity. Utah imposes a universal mask mandate as infections skyrocket. However, some possible good news. Pfizer has a vaccine it claims is 90% effective. Regardless, won't be ready for this winter. And the detente ends as progressives and moderate Democrats try and establish the narrative. Meanwhile, Donald Trump still thinks he's going to be president. Who is going to tell him? UN humanitarian official condemns Israeli demolition of Palestinian homes. And COVID relief-starved cities look to shrink retiree benefits. Meanwhile, the 2020 election is a redistricting and democracy disaster. And turnout shatters some very long-held democratic myths. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being with us today. We are a little bit short-staffed, so bear with us as we muddle through this. People are very excited weekend. Matt, I'm not sure if you heard the news, but on Saturday, Joe Biden was I guess, called. I mean, it's not official yet. It isn't official ever. In these elections until well into December. But all of the major media outlets called the election for Joe Biden. As it is today, or I should say as of yesterday evening, Joe Biden's lead had increased to over 20,000. I mean, excuse me, had increased to over 20,000 in Arizona. Joe Biden's lead increased to over 10,000 in Georgia. Joe Biden's lead increased to almost 45,000 in Pennsylvania. And this is not, and this is very important, because I spent probably more time than I should have listening to right-wing talk radio this weekend. And they are still harping about, and we should say right now, Donald Trump is somewhere in a bunker underneath the White House. I think they're giving him a lot of comfort food. They're very, very nervous about telling him what the reality of the election is. He has yet to concede. But that number, 43,194 as of yesterday in Joe Biden's lead in Pennsylvania, it's probably higher as of now. They've been doing it. They've been counting this morning. That number does not include ballots that arrived, that were cast before November 3rd, but arrived after 8 p.m. on November 3rd. Those ballots have been sequestered. Now, I am personally of the mind that they should be counted. But these are the ones that are subjected to litigation that could go to the Supreme Court. These are the ones that the Supreme Court said, we're not going to deal with those now prior to the election, but there was a state Supreme Court, or I should say a state court, that said, sequester these ballots so that we know ballots that came in after 8:30 p.m. on election day, we're going to put into a different pile. So if we need to exclude those, and really what we're saying is that even if you cast the ballot before November 3rd and put it in the mail, if the mail is slow, then it's your fault as a voter. But put that aside for a moment. This is a separate pile of ballots that have yet to be counted. And the Republicans are talking about these ballots as if they will make a difference if they're excluded. But Joe Biden is already up by almost 45,000 votes in Pennsylvania. Doesn't need those ballots. Yet this is how they'll maintain their grift. This is how Donald Trump will ask his followers for more money with the hopes of paying off campaign debt, which I think probably we will find at one point has largely just gone into a whole series of basically self-dealing or extended self-dealing. But we shall see on that. But I want to make that clear because we hear a lot about these court cases, and none of them at this point appear to be able to make any difference whatsoever. And on Saturday, and I had time had collapsed. I thought we had talked about this Friday, but apparently it happened on Saturday. Here's Rudy Giuliani saying that networks don't get to call elections, as if that's never happened before. And it's true. The networks can get it wrong. They scheduled a press conference out in front of the Four Seasons. Not the Four Seasons Hotel. No, of course not. The Four Seasons Total Landscaping Company. Here it is.
The poll? Because they don't decide the election. The call for Joe Biden isn't, who was it called by? Oh my goodness, all the networks. Wow. All the networks. We have to forget about the law. Judges don't count. All the networks thought Biden was going to win by 10%. Gee, what happened? Come on, don't be ridiculous. Networks don't get to decide elections. Courts do.
Not voters.
Courts do, not voters. Voters don't even come into play here. Folks, can you imagine, and this is why we heard so many reports of that Donald Trump was very upset about his legal team. Can you imagine that being the lawyer that you're counting on to reverse the results of an election? There is no doubt in my mind that Rudy Giuliani, when he asked which networks, did not realize that all the networks had. Right? I mean, he was looking, he was hoping he could say, the Communist News Network or MSDNC? I mean, this is, in fact, I listened to Rudy Giuliani. I think it must have been, maybe it was Friday night. He has a 1-hour show on WABC. And I got to say, he, as someone who has done talk radio and also has times where he's very tired, and Rudy's mailing this in, folks. He did about a 4-minute monologue and then took phone calls from people without having any idea, apparently, not even listening to anything he's saying. But that's so when he says Communist News Network and MSDNC, that is, I'm not paraphrasing, I'm quoting. That is what he anticipated he was going to get. And then he found out that, oh, yes, even Fox has, yes, called it. And the story, of course, that people took away from that was that the president thought, apparently there was some miscommunication between Corey Lewandowski and the president to the effect of, we're going to do the conference in Philadelphia at the Four Seasons. and it was not the Four Seasons Hotel. It ended up being Four Seasons Total Landscaping, which I guess on one side of it is, I'm not sure, is it a dry cleaners and then a sex toy shop? So, I mean, very convenient for folks.
I still suspect that the Four Seasons, the real Four Seasons, may have been like, we actually want to get paid for renting out our, you know, venue. So no, we won't.
Oh no, they were very quick to say this is not happening at our place. We're not associated with that whatsoever. Supposedly, the story they're spinning now is that they could not find a less hostile part of town. That the first press conference they tried to do, which I think we played clips of, with Pam Bondi, was overshadowed by a DJ who had a loudspeaker system and they couldn't hear it. So she could only just wave a document in the air. I mean, I laugh because what is hilarious about all of this is they keep claiming there is massive evidence of fraud. We are 6 days out now, and yet they have not been able. When you hear them talk about the fraud, they will just talk about it in the most general terms. And they have not been able to establish a single, they say that, well, there's a whistleblower, they're in Michigan or in Pennsylvania, but nothing in terms of what the whistleblower has said. There was an attempt to say that there were no observers who were let into these various counting places. And sadly for them, there were observers there. And it was a total fabrication. And in multiple jurisdictions, the judges basically said, you're wasting our time. Here is Rudy Giuliani on with Maria Bartiromo. This is on Sunday Morning Futures. This is a Fox Business News show.
And nope, it's Fox News.
Fox News. Oh, sorry. And they keep, you know, asking for evidence. They don't get any evidence. And so now they're wondering, like, will the baby in chief concede? And apparently all the reporting now is that many of these legal cases are there just to sort of give Donald Trump a sort of like a soft landing so that it's not too shocking to him. But here is Maria Bartiromo almost pleading Rudy Giuliani to, like, let's not, we're watching, this is getting a little bit ugly now.
So, in other words, you're saying that will the president concede anytime soon, I guess, is my final question, given all of this?
It really would be wrong for him. At this point, it would be wrong for him to concede. There is strong evidence that this was an election that in at least three or four states and possibly 10, it was stolen. In other words, it was based on false votes. Now, you can't let an election go into history without challenging that. I mean, right. Gore got
so
2 months to challenge
it. So how long will this take, Rudy? How long do you expect all of this?
I would think they'd give him at least 2 months, right?
Yeah, people are just like, please, give us a timeline here. Can you imagine the incompetence associated with a Democratic Party that is perpetrating fraud in 10 states, yet that can't flip the Senate? Like, as if these people are like, look, we're doing this. We're all going to vote for Biden for president. This is the way we're going to do it. We've got a lot of dead people lined up. Shouldn't we have also had them vote down ballot?
Yeah, can we leave off Georgia? We're kind of running up the score at that point. Can we go up to Maine and try to knock Susan Collins off maybe?
Right. Right. Or why did we elect Joe Biden in Georgia fraudulently and then force a runoff with our Senate candidates? Does that make any sense to anybody? And it's just coincidental, all of this fraud. I mean, this is what we have to believe if we're to believe their narrative, which is that there was a massive concerted effort by the Democrats to commit fraud across 10 states, yet it didn't occur to them to also help out their Senate candidates in these states. Right. I mean, that's what we're to believe. And I mean, if we could have done this in Georgia, we couldn't have done this in Maine. What about turning some state houses? Later in the program, we're going to talk a little bit about the failures that took place down ballot. I know people want to celebrate, but this is a get back to work moment, folks. Take your vacation at the end of the year. People had a lot of excitement over the weekend, and rightfully so. But Joe Biden's working today, so we should too. Just want to remind you that today's program is sponsored, at least in part, by Honey. Look, a lot of people doing a lot of online shopping these days. I certainly am. I'm not going into a stores if I can. I can help it in certain instances. You buy stuff online. I know certainly my daughter loves to do that. Well, Honey has been a bit of a lifesaver. It's the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and automatically applies the best one available at checkout. If you've heard me talk about Honey in the past, you know that years ago, I sat Mila down. It was almost like I was telling her, like, you know, the birds and the bees type of thing, which I actually did at a very young age, but that's not the point. The point is that I said to her, I said, look, before you buy any of this stuff, because she used to buy, there's a kids clothing store. I don't know. But I used to say, you know, you've got to search for coupons. You can save $5 or $10 sometimes. You can get free shipping. Huge pain in the butt because you got to go to these like coupon places and see if you can get the right one. Half the time it doesn't work. Well, that's where Honey comes in. It is basically your online shopping best friend. Here's how it works. You get Honey on your computer for free. And you do this with just two easy clicks. You go to joinhoney.com/majority. When you get there, two clicks is all it's going to take. And then when you're checking out one of its over 30,000 supported sites, Honey pops up and all you have to do is click and apply coupons. Boom. Honey searches for the coupons. They find working codes. They apply the best one and they put it in your cart. And all of a sudden you've saved, I don't know, $5, $10, 10%. 12% free shipping, whatever it is. They support all kinds of retailers, tech and gaming sites, fashion brands, even food delivery. I can tell you right now, there is a piece of clothing that I'm wearing right now. In fact, you're looking at it, that I've saved a couple of bucks on with Honey. And my daughter, I see, you know, it adds up. It adds up over time. Makes a difference in what she purchases all the time, you know, buying a lot of clothes. And then, of course, my daughter turns around and sells it online and then thinks she's a business person. But look, it's simple. If you have a computer, Honey should be on it. It's free. It works with whatever browser you use. You can get Honey for free today at joinhoney.com/majority. That's joinhoney.com/majority. Check it out. Also, this company has been a big help for me. I mean, in addition to the great food, but it's been a help in a couple of different ways. Particularly right now, I am in no mood to cook. In the past couple of weeks have been rather difficult. I am now like, I've got into this thing. Well, I should tell you, I'm speaking in terms of Freshly. Freshly is a service where they basically send you fully prepared dinners delivered fresh, not frozen, right to your door. So you can avoid the grocery store if you want to. You can avoid cooking if you want to. They have golden oven fried chicken, creamy springtime risotto, fall apart tender beef brisket. And that's just a few of the 30 plus health conscious options to choose from. For me lately, I've been eating basically anything that I can eat in a bowl. That's the way I've been eating now. They have this sausage, a baked penne, which is amazing. And I can put it in a bowl. I ate it. White bean turkey chili, one of my favorites. And they have a fried chicken hash with roasted sweet corn. I put it in a bowl. That's basically the way I'm working this. But it has also been amazing for my mom, who has been dealing with some health issues. So me and my sisters, We signed her up for this. She gets it delivered. We had signed her up for this before they started to advertise here. And because we knew that my mom would be like, well, I can't let you pay for this. We had told her, I hope she's not listening today, that they were advertising on the show and that I was getting it for free. And then just coincidentally, Freshly came and decided to advertise on the show. I was like, great. Now I'm, but my mom loves the food. I do too. So you can join both of us and 1.5 million satisfied customers. Skip the shopping, the prepping, the cooking, and the cleanup. Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off their first two orders at freshly.com/majority. That's freshly.com/majority. We'll put both those links into the podcast and the podcast descriptions and the YouTube descriptions. So before we get to more news related to the election, Joe Biden today is assembling a coronavirus task force. And it will consist of actual scientists, scientists who are respected by their peers, who are working and take coronavirus seriously. The one thing that could very well bog down the attempts of the Biden administration, or I should say transition team, to get ramped up, because there's nothing that these folks can propose that Biden can obviously do now, but he is getting these proposals lined up so that on day one, he can implement these to the extent that he can implement them with a potentially hostile Senate. But there's another problem. There's a Trump administration appointee, this is according to the Washington Post, who is refusing to sign a letter which allows President-elect Joe Biden's transition team to formally begin its work this week. It's the administrator of the General Services Administration. This is an agency that's in charge of federal buildings, and they must sign paperwork, which essentially allows the flowing of millions of dollars, which are budgeted to transition administrations, if you will, gives them access to government buildings, gives them access to government officials, gives them, you know, I imagine like key cards or IDs, equipment. Essentially, there is a budget. There is facilities all set aside for presidential transitions. One person has to authorize it, and this person, Emily Murphy, who is the GSA administrator, refuses to write the letter. Now, there was a transition delay in 2000 because there was no call and no clear consensus on who the president was until December. But aside from that, that's it. GSA spokeswoman Pamela Pennington says an ascertainment has yet been made and its administrator will continue to abide by and fulfill all requirements under the law. I mean, it is unclear when this is going to happen, but, you know, this is part of the continuance of the Trump administration to basically say we will screw over. I mean, look, even if you are of the belief that we don't know what the outcome of the presidency is, and I don't think there's any rational people who are not on the payroll literally of the Trump campaign who argue this, you could release these funds and have this work done just to ramp up. But hopefully it will not inhibit the Biden administration too much, because obviously we have in this country, and it's happening to a certain extent around the world, but we are perhaps uniquely ill-suited for what's happening. According to Scott Gottlieb, who was the former Food and Drug Administrator from 2017 to April 2019. We're going to have a, this is a quote, we're going to have a record number of hospitalizations this week. Now 56,000 people are hospitalized, 11,000 are ICU. These are very big numbers nationally, and it's accelerating very quickly. Utah, I mentioned, has called for a universal mask mandate because they are running out of ICU beds. There is, we are experiencing a massive surge in coronavirus epidemics. We have 10 million people infected or have been infected in this country. 1 million of those have happened in the last couple of weeks. So you do the math. The rate in which infections are accelerating, the number of infections are accelerating, is, I think it's terrifying for epidemiologists. And we are headed into, and not only that, I mean, frankly, you know, I understand the intense desire to celebrate Donald Trump's loss. But I got to be honest with you, I saw images of all the celebrations, and I got very, very concerned. You know, I think the in general, we saw during the protests, at least in the context of New York, there was very little implications in terms of COVID infections to the protests. But I think people, in many respects, during those protests were more orderly and were more conscientious about mask wearing. And I worry about all of those celebrations. And then I also worry about a lot of those folks in 2 weeks going to see their relatives for Thanksgiving. And of course, just broadly speaking across the country, if Thanksgiving is going to be, could potentially be a, another inflection point. So a lot of concerns in terms of coronavirus. It makes total sense that the first thing that Joe Biden would do on the first day, working day, that he is the president-elect would be to convene a panel. However, there is some good news. And it is always best to take these things with a certain grain of salt. However, Pfizer and its partner BioNTech announced today that the vaccine they have been developing against COVID-19 was not only strongly effective, but it exceeds expectations by a magnitude of, like, as far as I could tell, most expectations and hopes were for a vaccine that was at least 50% effective. 60 to 70% effective would have been considered very, very good. According to Pfizer and BioNTech, their vaccine, well, this is from Stat News. The company said early analysis of the results showed that individuals who received two injections of the vaccine 3 weeks apart experienced more than 90% fewer cases of symptomatic COVID-19 than those who received a placebo. Now, phase three of the study is ongoing. Additional data could affect results, but there's a couple of things to be clear about. 90% fewer cases of symptomatic COVID-19. That's good. The companies will not file for an emergency use authorization to distribute the vaccine until they reach one more milestone. That is when half of the patients in their study have been observed for safety issues for at least 2 months following their second dose. And according to Pfizer, they will cross that threshold in the third week of November. So we're 2 weeks out before they will file for an emergency use authorization, but they must have some measure of confidence at this point. Couple other things to note. There's no information yet on whether the vaccine prevents severe cases. What happens to those 10% who do contract it? There is no information whether it prevents people from carrying COVID-19 without symptoms. It is also not possible at this point to say with any confidence how long it will protect against infection with the virus. But, you know, it's not impossible to imagine that you get your two shots in the first 3 weeks. 6 months later, you got to get a booster shot. I mean, for 90% of efficacy, if this holds, this is basically a, if that holds, it is basically a ticket to ending the pandemic. Side effects appear to be fever, some aches, seems to be worse than a flu shot, but not dramatically so. Also, the results have not been peer-reviewed. They have not been peer-reviewed by outside scientists. They have not been published in a medical journal. There is no information as to how independent monitors have what they have observed in terms of the vaccinations. Pfizer claims that up to 50 million doses could be available globally by the end of the year, with 1.3 billion available in 2021. Apparently, one of the big distribution challenges to this is that the vaccine must be stored at super cold temperatures. Super cold temperatures. So this is a challenge. This is going to be a challenge to make sure that it can be distributed, but all these things are things that can be managed far better than actually finding something that is 90% effective. So there it is. This is not something that's going to be available this winter. It will probably not be something that becomes widely available if all of these things go right from here on in and they're testing until the summer of 2021. That is what the experts say. So the big challenge for this country and the world is going to be to get through the next couple of months, frankly, and we shall see. It's going to require some, you know, we may see more mandatory mask mandates. I don't think that Biden at this point, from what I've read, is not planning to do something like that, but I think they're going to widely encourage it. So we will see. Let's move on to some of the not terribly exciting aspects of this election. There is, as you know, January 5th, there's going to be a runoff in Georgia. Two Senate races, David Perdue versus John Ossoff, Raphael Warnock versus Kelly Loeffler. These races, traditionally, Democrats have not won in runoff races in Georgia. Traditionally, they have, and this is from Dave Weigel's the trailer, just giving a couple of examples historically. Democrat John Barrow faced a runoff with Republican Brad Raffensperger in the race of Secretary of State. This was 2 years ago. Barrow trailed in the first round by 16,000 votes and lost by more than 65,000 votes. Turnout overall had fallen by half. 12 years ago, when turnout surged in the race between McCain and Obama, then Saxby Chambliss went to overtime with Democrat Jim Martin. Chambliss led the first round by 3 points and the second by 15. So the trend is in Georgia, if past is indicative of future, that the Democrats are not going to win. However, we just saw a Democratic president win Georgia for the first time in almost my entire lifetime. And I'm fairly old. Certainly within, it's been decades upon decades. So it is unclear as to what the outcome is. It couldn't have more relevance. Despite the fact that Ossoff and Warnock are not necessarily the most progressive of Senate candidates, putting aside that apparently Zephyr Teachout has said that Ossoff has some pretty good antitrust bona fides. Warnock has, I think, is closer in terms of like some policies that we would appreciate as progressives. I guess Clinton won Georgia in 92. So that's 30 years almost. On day one, if the Democrats control the Senate, even by one vote, and the tie vote would be Kamala Harris's, you have the opportunity through the CRA, which is an administrative law that says Congress can reverse any executive orders that have come down by the president within a 60-day working day threshold. So that goes back to almost basically through 6 months ago, 7 months ago. Congress can reverse it. They do not need a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate to do so. So the House, a Senate where Kamala Harris is the tiebreaker, and Joe Biden can reverse a whole slew of executive orders that I anticipate we're going to get from Donald Trump over the next couple of months. Certainly ones that he's had in the past. And once these executive orders are reversed, to reinstitute those as laws, the next Congress has to pass them with a two-thirds majority. Many of Barack Obama's executive orders, particularly dealing with the environment, were overturned by Republicans in this manner and made well out of reach for future Congresses to fix, even legislatively, even statutorily. The implications for Joe Biden to seat cabinet members and to pass legislation all ride on these two races in Georgia. This is an all hands on deck. The reality is the odds are stacked against the Democrats there. But again, that assessment of reality is based on past performance. And we have seen in Georgia specifically an ability to outperform past performance. Nearly 30 years it's been since a Democrat won Georgia as a president. And we saw it happen a couple of days ago. So if you have the opportunity to engage in that, I can certainly understand the cynicism and the pessimism, but there's no value in that whatsoever. So better to engage with that situation than not. Tomorrow on the program, we'll have David Dayan, executive editor of The American Prospect, on the show, and he's going to come and he's going to talk about what Joe Biden can do even if he doesn't have a Senate. And there's a lot. And just like the conversation we had with Jeff Hauser last week, very important for people who care about where we're going. I mean, Donald Trump has been defeated, but the political ideology that ushered him into office, Republicanism, has not. And we still have, and I say this as a progressive, if you will, or to the left side of the Democratic Party, a huge unfulfilled agenda. And we're already seeing now the jockeying for power in this new Congress. If you will recall, we've talked about this a bunch of times. After 2018, Democrats had an incredible showing, the most successful off-year election in decades. If they didn't have the numbers that challenged their biggest win ever, it was only because of gerrymandering. Sheer votes, they had the biggest win they had had in off-year elections. Within days, we saw the moderates and conservatives in the Democratic Party attempt to build their power within and the narrative within their within the media, within their caucus, by attacking Ilhan Omar. In fact, they so ham-fistedly did this that, and Nancy Pelosi engaged in this as well, it completely overshadowed their passing H.R. 1, which was their big ethics, anti-corruption, pro-voting. It was actually a very good bill. Nobody ever heard a thing about it because Pelosi, for whatever reason, decided to make this about attacking Ilhan Omar and undercutting the squad. And they right out of the gate, they tried to do this again, where you saw moderates come out early on and claim that the reason why the Democrats did so dismally down ballot, and they did do dismally down ballot, lost a couple of seats in the House, failed to pick up the Senate, still a chance to do so, but it shouldn't come down in this situation to two runoffs in Georgia. And even maybe even more importantly, in state House races across the country, Democrats failed in every single state to change the course of redistricting that's going to take place. If anything, it went backwards. Arizona, Connecticut, they failed to get a supermajority to gain control of the redistricting. Arizona, there's an independent redistricting commission that's been in place since 2000, but the Supreme Court is primed to strike down independent commissions on redistricting. They say that the state legislature can't even decide to delegate that authority. In Georgia, Republicans maintain full control over redistricting. In Iowa, there's a nonpartisan agency has proposed maps to the Iowa legislature. But the Democrats failed to flip the state house to break a GOP's full control. And this is the first time Republicans will have full control at Iowa. So they may reject that nonpartisan redistricting map. In Kansas, Republicans maintain their supermajority, even though Democrats just needed one single state house seat to flip, to break the veto-proof majority. There's a Democratic governor there, but they have veto override power now. In Michigan, they have an independent redistricting commission, could get invalidated by the Supreme Court. They failed to retake Democrats there. We failed to take the state house. Even though it's possible we could get another situation in Michigan like we have in Wisconsin, where Democrats win more votes but get less seats because of it. Remember, this is the dynamic that we have in Wisconsin. 54% of the votes in 2018 went to Democrats, but only 36% of the seats did. That is the problem with redistricting. It is completely, not only is it totally anti-democratic, it is debilitating in terms of political power, because that also impacts the congressional redistricting. In New Hampshire, Republicans regained their gerrymandered majorities. They have now full control over redistricting. in New Hampshire. In New York, it remains to be seen if New York Democrats will have a supermajority, so they will be able to redistrict. In North Carolina, Republicans gained seats. And they are possibly set up to regain a supremacy on the North Carolina Supreme Court. Oregon, the Democrats failed to get a two-thirds majority. Texas, Virginia, the story is all the way. Virginia is one of the few places where Democrats are doing okay. And, of course, they have an independent commission there. Democrats are faced with this failure down ballot, and there is finger pointing. And the finger pointing has, there was basically an attack by folks in the Democratic leadership, Clyburn. You also, we talked about, I think it was on Friday, the phone call that was leaked and was actually listened to by reporters where, Abigail Spanberger and others criticized AOC, the squad, and just the general idea that Democrats would in any way be. I mean, I don't know that there's no legislation, there's no policies that have been adopted by the Democrats, but in any way be sympathetic to things like Black Lives Matter, sympathetic to the idea of decreasing police budgets and providing those resources for other organizations in cities to basically make the policy portfolio or the responsibilities of the cops less. Then you had John Kasich goes on television, and look, I did not put John Kasich on the DNC and give him as much speaking time as any other Democrat. This is the problem that comes with highlighting and promoting things like Project Lincoln. Of course, the Republicans got more votes than they did last time. There's no evidence that Project Lincoln changed a single person's vote or John Kasich changed a single person's vote. But somehow John Kasich, a lifelong Republican, former Fox host, former and maybe current, frankly, Wall Street guy is out there, and now he's explaining what the Democrats have to do. Clip number 10.
Now is the time for Democrats, and I believe Joe Biden will do this, to begin to listen to what the other half the country has had to say. But we have to listen to what those folks, those Republicans all across this country has had to say. The best thing that's happened to Joe Biden is the fact that the United States Senate is either going to be Republican or very close. And the far left can push him as hard as they want. And frankly, the Democrats have to make it clear to the far left that they almost cost him this election. And that congresswoman from Virginia warned the Democrats, you want to talk about defunding the police? You'll have no support. And I think this is an opportunity for Biden to talk about, you know, the center right and the center left of this country and what can be achieved. Because we have enormous problems with debt, Social Security, Medicare, health care. Little steps, little steps. One other thing, one Democrat told me at some point, if they'd have been more clear in rejecting the hard left, they would have appealed more to Americans who I believe essentially live in the middle. So I think actually he's in a better position today because being pulled from the left isn't going to work. They will not get those things done.
I mean, this is, first off, understand that when John Kasich says we have debt and we've got to deal with Medicare and Social Security, he is talking about cutting those, the two most popular programs in the entire country. The staple of that has been basically keeping Democrats in the game to the extent that they're in the game for almost 100 years. That should be enough to discount John Kasich. Period. End of story. But the idea that the Democrats were in any way inhibited by these policies, there's just no evidence of it. Zero. Zero evidence. If Joe Biden, first of all, there was no Democrats out there who didn't have enough resources. No moderate Democrats, for sure. No centrist Democrats. No Republican-leaning Democrats who didn't have the resources to push back on false narratives, if that's what they wanted to do. Joe Biden was able to do it. They could have done it. But the fascinating thing is, too, is that AOC was interviewed by the New York Times. And her, what she had to say is being completely mischaracterized. And it's fascinating to watch this. She gave a critique. And one of the things that I've been, you know, I've always said about AOC is that there are two elements about her that are particularly hopeful in my mind. And one is her ideology. She is full-throated in her support for things like Green New Deal, things like Medicare for All, et cetera, et cetera. But even if you put aside ideological differences that people might have, and even if you want to argue that, well, she is in a district that is made up of something like 70% working class folks and 80% people of color. Even if your argument is that those policies won't sell in other locations, I don't know what those locations might be or why they're necessary for Democrats to win. And even if you also wanted to say, like, well, I mean, the fact that they would elect her over Joe Crowley and also elect her and fend off her challenge significantly may be indicative of a dynamic that, you know, things didn't change that much in 2 years in her district. It could be just that people have been holding power and not providing what their constituents actually want. But putting that aside from an ideological perspective, her critique of the Democratic Party is not an ideological one, at least in the context of these elections. Her critique of the Democratic Party is that their failure to exercise best practices and to do politics correctly. Remember, the DCCC punished a lot of organizations that worked with primary people. And so they ended up essentially blacklisting some of the best for-profit political firms, the ones that have the best sense of how to motivate voters, how to communicate with voters on particularly on digital platforms. And what she's saying, if you read this New York Times interview, and this is what she's saying. She's saying two things. One, quote, we also learned that progressive policies do not hurt candidates. She's not suggesting that it is a panacea to adopt Medicare for All. She is simply saying they don't hurt candidates. Every single candidate that co-sponsored Medicare for All in a swing district kept their seat. Now, again, co-sponsoring, you just sign up for it. It's not like you run on it necessarily, but that means it's not a liability. We also know that co-sponsoring the Green New Deal was not a sinker. Mike Levin was an original co-sponsor of the legislation. He kept his seat. In other words, if you think you support a policy that is the right policy, but you are worried that it's a liability, we have proof now that it's not a liability. It may not be a panacea. It may not make you win your district. But it shouldn't be an inhibition to you winning that district. She goes on to say, I've been starting to look into actual functioning of these campaigns. So she's shifting here. It is now about the mechanics of actually politicking. The thing is, I've been unseating Democrats for 2 years. She's been working with Justice Democrats. I have been defeating Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee-run campaigns for 2 years. That's how I got to Congress. That's how we elected Ayanna Pressley. That's how Jamal Bowman won. That's how Cori Bush won. And so we know about extreme vulnerabilities in how Democrats run campaigns. She is now speaking as a campaign runner. This is not an ideological issue for her. Some of this is criminal. It's malpractice. Connor Lamb spent $2,000 on Facebook the week before the election. I don't think anybody who's not on the internet in a real way in the year of our Lord 2020 and loses an election can blame anyone else when they're not really on the internet. And she says, if the fact of the matter is you're not spending $200,000 on Facebook with fundraising, persuasion, volunteer recruitment, get out the vote the week before the election, you are not firing on all cylinders. And not a single one of these campaigns were firing on all cylinders. She is criticizing the Democrats for political malpractice, not on ideological grounds. These folks are pointing toward Republican messaging. They feel killed them, right? But why were you so vulnerable to that attack? If you're not door knocking, if you're not on the internet, if your main points of reliance are TV and mail, you're not running a campaign on all cylinders. I just don't see how anyone could be making ideological claims when they didn't run a full-fledged campaign. Here's the dirty little secret, folks. If your campaign buys a lot of ads, if your campaign buys a lot of mailers, your campaign consultants, your advisors, they make a ton of money. If your campaign goes and knocks on a bunch of doors, if your campaign buys a bunch of ads on Facebook, you do not make a ton of money. When you buy TV ads, you as an advisor, you get 15% off the top. A lot of times it's you're buying ads from your own agency that is an outside agency that is yours or your partner's. What she is talking about is a sclerotic Democratic Party that is running campaigns that may or may not have been successful years ago, decades ago. And they're continuing to do so because people are making money off of it. And they're in the position of making those decisions.
Did you see Connor Lamb responded saying AOC doesn't know what she's talking about? This is what Tim Tagara says. He says she doesn't have any idea how we ran the campaign or what we spent, but it's public. He may not have known that. He spent $8,000 in the last month and $1,331 in the last 4 days. So she
That's right. He came out. He was interviewed. He did not deny that he spent so little on Facebook. He doesn't even realize that that information is public. Tim Tkaris was Bernie Sanders' his digital fundraiser. So what we're dealing with is a Democratic establishment. There's an ideological argument to this, but put that aside for a moment. We're dealing with a Democratic establishment that has become ossified. Ossified? Help me out here, Matt. That has become.
Yeah, that's right.
Ossified. And they continue to rely on a model of running campaigns that is failing over and over again and is being maintained only because those people in the positions of making these decisions are making a lot of money off it. We will have more to say on this in the coming days. Tomorrow, David Dayen will be on to talk about what Joe Biden can do, even if he doesn't have that Senate. But if you're in Georgia or you're around Georgia, you know, people in Georgia, or you can go to Georgia, very important runoffs. All right. And we'll head into the fun half in just a moment. I think that is our time. Joining us in the fun half, Emma will show up. We'll be talking about all sorts of different things. Just a reminder, it's your support that helps this program stay alive. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you're not only supporting the free show, but you're getting all sorts of new material in the fun half. So check that out. Also, don't forget AM Quickie. AMQuickie.com. You can sign up. You get more information. You get 7 minutes of headlines in the morning. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. What else? Oh, yeah. This week on Nomi's show should be pretty awesome. Nomi really understands this dynamic of the of this basically this juggernaut that makes money off of campaigns. I mean, look, it's the hardest thing in the world to tell someone whose job it is, whose money depends upon something, that what they're doing is wrong. This is in every business. So this is not just, you know, a question of like politics, or that there's, you know, some type of unique corruption here. It's simply the reality of this is the way that they've always done it. And it's much easier and, well, much more profitable to say, oh, no, this is a question of ideology. And then just basically say, we're going to go with a 50-50 chance of us winning. The Democrats should have done better. They should have done better in these races. There is no possible way you could run an enterprise like the Democratic Party without believing that they should have done better. There was a failure to brand the Democratic Party down ticket. True. But just on basic practices, they failed. They failed because they're protecting a certain ideological bent. We'll talk more about that in the coming weeks. But you can check out Nomi's show. She's not doing it live today. But youtube.com/TheNomiKey Show. Nomi Key Show. Also, don't forget, check out The Antifada, patreon.com/TheAntifada. Matt, what's happening on TMBS?
Yeah, we'll be doing a TMBS tomorrow night. I'm not sure who the guest is, but look forward to that. Also, people subscribe, twitch.tv/literary hangover. I'll be more active on that, too. A lot of change is coming in the things I'm producing, but I don't want to say more than that. So.
Ooh, really? Really?
It's going to be a transition period, but it's going to be fun. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to give a shofar for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. They won. Ding dong. The witch is dead. Hopefully, the new witch will be better.
Happy neoliberal victory day, everybody.
There you go. Well, I mean, it's neoliberal also lost. Neoliberal plus massive corruption and incompetence lost.
So, no, it's true.
So maybe we'll be able to maybe we'll be able to get through. Well, I don't know if we're going to. This winter is, I think, it's sort of set in stone on some level. But we'll see. But for the next. For the next pandemic that comes over the summer next year, we'll be in better shape. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This week.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jamie.
I think she might have just lost her internet.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment with the fun half.
Left is back.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27.
One half. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd, don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
You think I might be a Nazi?
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.